2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
All right, welcome back. Hour number two and the final one for the show here. Chilly morning out there, as you just heard, 43 degrees in downtown Salt Lake City. Going to be nice, though, if you look at the weather for the rest of the week. We get in the upper 50s, maybe lower 60s, and it stays there with nothing but sunshine. So after a stormy pattern here that brought as much as a foot of new snow, and maybe even a little bit more than that in some of our ski resorts, we're going to get a little dry period here. We'll talk about some of that snow, and I know it's got skiers, like the one sitting in front of me, jonesing to get the skis out now.
I know.
There was a great video online, and I don't know which resort it was, of
Brighton.
People hiking. It was Brighton.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Somebody had done a drone flyover or something, and you could see all of these ants with their skis on their back hiking up the hill.
Well, there's like 200 in what they call the boneyard there.
Yeah. And this time of year with a foot of snow on the ground, it really is a boneyard.
Yeah. I mean, my sons, they call the boneyards great because there's no snow anywhere, but they pile it up so you have these trails from one place to the other, these little features and stuff.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, a rite of passage into the new.
Absolutely.
It's a tradition for these skiers that they pass along or they do with their buddies.
It's like tailgating before a football game.
Want to be the first ones on the mountain, so you hike your way up. Tim Hughes along with Mike Navidomskis, who is in studio with us this morning, and a little sleepy-eyed.
Yeah,
Late-night Ute game last night that got over about 11:30.
We're so beholden to the dang advertisers.
We are. And programs rely on that network money, so I don't think you're going to put that genie back in the bottle anytime soon. Speaking of late starts, the Cougs tonight take on the Rainbows of Hawaii down in Provo, and that's
8:30.
It's an 8:30 start.
The Rainbows.
Yeah, let me ask you this: what happens if it goes beyond midnight?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Have to walk off the field.
Well, I went to BYU. That was a problem because it's a Sabbath.
This has happened before, and they'll be awfully close to that midnight mark.
Yeah.
But we'll have all the action for you with a couple of hours of pregame coming up later on the home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio. And Russ is here from Sky Call.
Good morning.
You send many phones down to – you said you didn't send many or any.
Down. But, you know, previous hurricanes, it wasn't. The first week, it's the weeks after for the cleanup that most people pick. Remember the guys that drove their truck down there with the trailer and everything?
Chainsaws.
Yeah. I expect to get some calls. We've got plenty of phones right now, of course, because the season, the main part of the season's over. But we're pretty busy. And then November, we've got Baja coming up.
That's right.
And that keeps us busy.
I say this every year, but I'm always surprised going into the general deer season that kicks off next Saturday, by the way.
Yeah.
That more hunters don't think to take a sat phone out. And we surmise that that's because they're with their buddies, they're in an area that they know well, it's a traditional spot, and they just don't think about it. But I can't think of a better time to have one than a deer season.
I've got a high percentage of customers that are out on the hunt that their loved ones have insisted that they take a device or they don't go hunting.
Because their loved ones are smarter than them?
Yeah. For the
no,
most part.
You know what that is? It's because the deer widows want to know when they're coming home so they can clean up the party.
Well, gals, the party's over.
He's on his way back down the mountain. Everybody out.
I had a gentleman pick up a tracker last night, and I told him, he does it. He says, I don't know why I'm taking this, except for that my wife said I needed to. But, you know, it's in this thread holds truth almost with everybody that rents a phone, is that they're not the ones that need the phone, really. They're not, because they're really prepared in every other way. It's usually somebody else they run into that needs the phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have old people out there. Grandpa's with you and stuff. You know, my grandfather had a stroke while we were deer hunting. So, it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, which raises a whole other question about making sure you're ready for the hunt health-wise.
Right.
And, you know, don't just get up off the couch after 6 months of watching TV and think you're going to go out there and have the stamina to go do what you need to do. Riley Peck is with us. He's a wildlife manager in the Central Region and joining us live this morning to talk about the deer hunt, which is coming up next week. First of all, Riley, thanks for joining us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We wanted to focus on, and we have talked about the long, hot summer that we had, and there are some ramifications from that for deer hunters that are going to make it a little bit tougher maybe than normal.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of an interesting deal. It seems until just a couple weeks ago, a start of a week ago, that our trend was super hot and super dry, which leads to in a lot of ways, a lot more difficult of a hunt. It is an interesting weather pattern that seems to have changed a little bit of late, but it does make things interesting.
Well, the one thing we know is that dry, hot weather makes the deer less active most of the summer, and you'd think, okay, so maybe that makes them a little easier to find because they'd be hunkered down probably near a water source, which is always something that hunters will focus on. But on the other hand, if you're a spot and stalker, you're not going to sneak up on these guys very easy.
No, both of those things are true. You know, when it's hot and dry and the leaves have started to fall off in a lot of areas, it makes it very loud. You're not going to sneak up on it. And you know, they do focus around water, but deer are very good at, like you said, hunkering down. And when you get it hot and dry conditions, they bed down early and don't move until dark when it's a lot cooler in the cooler temperatures. And so the deer are not moving when it is available light.
I'm not a deer hunter. I've hunted deer twice in my life and ended up chasing one that my buddy and his dad knew they had hit. And we were in thigh-deep snow, and we chased it all day. And I remember just having a miserable time. and we never found that deer. And his dad kept saying, "You guys go up and around and, you know, head him off on the other side." We ran all day in thigh-deep snow and never found the guy. So that was my one experience with it. But getting out and spotting or scouting these areas is obviously a little late for that for hunters, but what do they need to know as they head out? Is it finding that water source?
You know, it's kind of a mix of everything. Right now it is the water source. It is because it's been so hot and dry, we have these pockets where you have kind of the wet springs where it produces a little bit more grass, a little bit more feed, and so where everything else is dry, it doesn't spread them out as much. You can search for them in an area that has a little bit more grass or food. You know, right now, there hasn't been enough snow to completely drive them off the mountains, but, you know, we do see some snow-capped mountains, which is pretty nice, and that allows you to sit on a peak and glass because they kind of stick out when everything behind them is white. And so just get out and look. I think traditionally as deer hunters, we don't love to work very hard, but hunting requires us to move. And so you get off the road a little bit, get to where, you know, they're not being chased by an ATV or a truck can see them very easily, and you have a much better chance. So bark and go out and hike and enjoy some of the beauty and be patient and use your binoculars. And I think the snow will help them move a little bit and you'll be able to spot them.
Yeah, that's the other thing I've learned talking with hunters is that most of us would say, man, we don't want to be out there if it's nasty, snowy, windy. But that does get the animals moving. And that gives you a little better chance of finding them. I was looking at some of the statistics on why we're talking about the dry conditions, the hot conditions of the summer. 40% of the state find themselves in a drought condition that's extreme. 7% of the state is in what they now call exceptional drought. And that's really as bad as it gets and as bad as we've seen in recent history. And that's particularly true in the eastern part of Utah. So if that is one of your favorite places to hunt, it's going to be something that you need to be thinking about and taking into consideration. Deer numbers, though, in the past couple of years, I mean, we've talked about the highest count. 2016, I think, was the highest count since the 80s. But we had a tough winter following that and then a drought on the back end of that. So it's the young deer, I think, that are suffering a little bit or have suffered in those counts.
Yeah, you know, it's incredible. A lot of times we worry so much and we're reactionary when we have a terrible winter, right? We see this deep snow and so we're focusing on on helping the animals out, and then there's questions of whether we feed or how do we help these animals get through this winter. But it's the drought that can be even more severe on them. You know, our, some of the studies and the color data that we have show that a severe or exceptional drought actually is harder on the survival on our young fawns than is a winter. And so we do, and a lot of these places have that severe drought, and we're seeing that, and deer numbers are a little bit lower than they were, like you mentioned, in 2016, but the deer numbers are still good. They're still upwards of a little bit over 360,000, which is a very good number as of recent years. The population is doing well. I think hunters can expect to see deer. You can expect to see bucks depending on where you're at. You know, they may not be moving. They may be congregated towards water or towards green areas or different places. But the drought has been tough, but I still think that you can expect to have a good hunt.
Yeah, here's the other characteristic that hunters might find when they're out there, too, and that is that the antlers are not going to be as good, because it was pointed out that a buck deer's body will meet its nutritional needs first before putting energy into its antler growth. And so, with the drought situation and less food source out there, you might find that the antlers are not as big as you have found in the past. Next Saturday, October 20th, it all gets underway. Family traditions come back through, and it's a sign of a changing of the seasons. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Riley. It's great to talk to you.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Riley Peck from the Division of Wildlife Resources. We'll take a quick break.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, look, we are short on time, so I want to jump in quickly and begin our conversation here this morning. The Row 4 ALS guys, we were joking a minute ago, not really joking, but it must be sort of like, hey, this is go time.
Yeah.
All this time we've been talking about these things, and now it's here. At least they're within a week and a half or so of getting out and staging for this. And I'm just telling our listeners right now, because of our makeshift studio situation, this could be this could be ugly. So let me just make sure we've got connections with both guys. Tim Ryan, can you hear us okay?
Good morning. I'm on.
All right. And Brian, have you also got us? Oop, hang on. Brian, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
And can you hear each other?
Yes, I can hear
him. Hey!
Wow!
Hey. All right, look at that. It worked.
Never happened again like that.
Yeah. A tiny rowboat together. We can all hear each other.
Yeah. Speaking of that, are all systems go here? What's it feel like to have this countdown finally going?
Boy, it's been an incredible couple of weeks since we last talked. We've got everybody's on board. All our gear equipment is shipped except for a few items that we're going to hand carry. We've got some additional equipment we're picking up next week from SkyCall Satellite, BGAN unit, so we can do some video uploads from the water. And so we're just tying up loose ends and ready to go.
And what about you, Brian?
Yep, everything's ready to go. You know, just button up a few last ends on personal and business life. But yeah, I think we're the whole team's ready to go and really just ready to get this race going.
And you've got your son Hunter there with you.
I do. He's so he actually lives out in Georgia.
Okay.
He's here with me right now for the next 10 days or so. But yeah, he's sitting here next to me, and I think he's pretty excited. He could probably tell you. Are you excited about this, bud?
Yeah, I think it'll be a great experience for my dad, and I think it will just be a great experience to go out in the ocean and feel like. Feel what it feels to go and row across the Atlantic Ocean and raise awareness for ALS.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Got to be a little scary, though, to send your dad out in the middle of this thing. He's going to be 3,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean. Does it worry you a little bit?
Yes and no. I think like that if they do end up getting in trouble, hopefully there will be a boat to help them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hats off to you for supporting your dad in this. And, guys, you can speak to this, and Tim will go back to you, I guess. You couldn't do this without support of family. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
No, not at all. We've had such a great network of friends, family, wives, significant others, and that are close to us, and really giving everybody a boost of strength to keep us going and keep us pumped up. And then, of course, we've had broad, tremendous support from our followers in the Utah community, up at UHealth, and through our many, many sponsors and friends. So it's been a humongous team effort, much bigger than the five of us.
Mm, yeah, definitely. It takes a lot. What's your time frame now? You're leaving just after Thanksgiving, and walk us through the steps you're going to take here.
Yep. So we'll be on the plane the 26th in the morning, early in the morning, flying to Tenerife, Canary Islands. Then we'll jump on a short ferry boat ride over to the next island. Then we'll be stationed in La Gomera, a little harborside town there. Our boat arrived just a couple of days ago, so we'll meet up with her when we get into town. Then the next 2 weeks are going to be spent sorting through all of our gear. We've got some mandatory race inspections to do, and a couple of training classes provided by the race administration, and information classes. I'm sure we'll spend a lot of the evenings getting to know other race teams as they come into town. Our team is arriving a little bit early, so we should be on the ground when most of the other teams that are European-based are going to get there. So, and I'll probably take a couple of training runs out in the local waters as well. Nice. Try to boat out, see how she really performs out over in the Atlantic.
Does everybody have specific duties here, or is it sort of everybody does everything at given times?
Well, during the race, you know, we're scheduled really down to the minute with the time that you're on the oars and the time that you're off the oars. And the duties when you're off the oars, there are team duties, cleaning the boat, making water, you know, running the water maker, making sure all of our systems are properly functioning, checking the performance of our solar panels, and so on and so forth. And everybody will just take those chores as they come. You know, we have a list of them.
Yeah.
And then while we're getting ready on land, that'll be more of a team effort. We're bringing our land-based manager, Steve Sawoya, and our tech manager, Amber Sawoya. She's going to help us with some social media and other duties so that we can be kind of a little more free to get our act together.
Yeah. Brian, what's your gut telling you about this experience now that you're close?
Oh, you know, I came into it a little bit late, but, you know, I've actually really enjoyed the journey. You know, the preparation, it's kind of been like drinking from the fire hose for me, you know. mandatory training's done. You know, there's quite a few classes that we've had to do that Tim's probably spoke to you over the last few months or so. And, I think it's just go time now. And I'm really excited to get it going. And hopefully we can make a fast crossing and just really, you know, enjoy the race too.
And Russ, you said you've added a BGAN unit.
Yeah,
to
that that's how they're going to be able to do live updates.
Nice.
On the BGAN unit.
Yeah. How long do you remind our listeners who may not have heard the story? How long will this trip take?
Well, the world record is just under 30 days, and of course we want nothing short of that, first place and make it, you know, all three good goals. But by our calculations, we should be somewhere in that 40 to 45 day race, weather and current and winds permitting. The world record for the longest crossing, I think, is 120 days. And all of our guys are committed to paddling a lot faster than that.
Well, we wish you the best, of course, and have a great Thanksgiving before you go, and have a great flight over. We expect to hear back from you in about 2 weeks, I believe.
Yes, sir. We'll make the call. We'll call you from sunny Canary Islands.
Yeah. By the way, their website, row4ALS.org. Thank you to Brian Armstrong, Tim Ryan for joining us this morning.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.